Blog Talk Radio.
So it seems like instead of starting with that horrible, with the Eminem start that which turns into Emerson, Lake and Palmer, we actually have no opening today. Because that's just how we roll. That is Sean's opening. Sean, are you done?
I'm done because I'm ready to talk about maybe some Eurocopa or Copa Americana or the Stanley Cup or the NBA Finals. I'm ready to roll after 2 weeks of not being here. I'm ready. Let's rock and roll. What we got?
All right. Second Sean Sports Radio back after, it seems like, about a four-week hiatus. Both of us were not here. Seth Kamen, Sean Palmer. Want to give the shout out before we get started in with everything else. I got the opportunity to host the radio show last week. It was a YouTube show live from David Tyree's charity event in Children in the City at Lucky Strike. What a great time, good charity, and doing 2 hours of TV. Someone had to look at my ugly face. At least I got to see Carly. Sean, unfortunately, was suffering from, well, according to my wife, Zika virus, because she's convinced that's what you have.
It was not Zika, but it was close. It definitely felt like it. It was horrendous, but you know what? We're back, so it really doesn't matter, and happy to be here. Extremely happy to be here.
All right. So before we get to the Cup and the soccer and the basketball, let's talk, what's happened over the last couple of weeks. Basically bad things, and bad things happen in threes, which probably doesn't put Dennis Rodman in the best of positions right now. We have, obviously the greatest boxer, one of the greatest boxers of all time, dies a week ago Saturday, whatever it was, and this week, pretty much Mr. Hockey, the all-time leading scorer prior to Wayne Gretzky. Gordie Howe, dies at age 88. Why don't we start with Muhammad Ali? We had Nabate come on. Nabate Ali came on our show, who used to host a boxing radio show on Sirius, and gave his thoughts, which I thought were interesting. They're a little bit different than what I would have anticipated. But what are your? And I got to speak a bit about it as well. But I want to give you kind of the forum. So please.
Well, look, Muhammad Ali. Definitely one of the best boxers of all time. Boxing is kind of like any other sport. It's hard to compare eras. I mean, you and I have talked about this numerous times with regards to every sport. Comparing a Gordie Howe to a Wayne Gretzky, comparing a Babe Ruth to a Barry Bonds, comparing a Wilt Chamberlain to a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to a Michael Jordan is very difficult. And I would say the same thing in boxing, comparing Mike Tyson to Muhammad Ali or Joe Louis or Sugar Ray Robinson, any of those boxers comparing to Muhammad Ali. But he's on the Rushmore, no question about it. And quite frankly, if you're going to make a Rushmore of sports, he's on there too. When they did the 100 greatest athletes for Sports Century, I know you and I did not host this show at the time, and I had a huge problem with ESPN in the way that they did it, because they never really told you how they did it. And for me, Ali should have been one or two, and Jackie Robinson would have been the other one, because not because of what they've done on the field, but the influence that they had on sports in general. So if you're putting him as number one or number two on the greatest influence on sports in the 100 years, that's quite an accomplishment. So he's a loss for the sports world. He's a loss for the world in general. Great ambassador. And you know what? You might have hated him in the 70s if you were alive. You may have hated what he did. And you have every right to do that. But you have to respect what he did too, because he stood up for his convictions. And that is not easy to do when the whole world is hating you.
No, it's not. And, you know, we discussed, you know, where he stands in boxing lore. You know, at worst, probably a top three heavyweight all time, Joe Louis. You could probably throw in Jack Johnson or Larry Holmes in the argument as well. But what's so amazing from a boxing perspective is this is a man who lost 3 years of the prime of his career and completely transitioned what he was as a boxer along those lines. Prior to being suspended for 2.5 years at age 27, he had won a gold medal. He was this fast, extraordinarily athletic, just move. No one had seen a heavyweight like him. Came back, he didn't quite have the athleticism, but he had the guile. He had the fortitude and he had the smarts. This was reflected in the Rumble in the Jungle against George Foreman, a fight nobody thought he had a chance to win. So this is reflected in the Thrill of Manila, which is the third fight with Joe Frazier in the finale of the greatest rivalry of boxing history, possibly in sports history. You know, the shame of it, of course, is he should have retired after that. He would lose to fighters not his caliber, a Trevor Burbick, a Leon Spinks, although he would beat Spinks again to win the final, to re-win the championship, the heavyweight for the third time. Got annihilated in the first 30 for 30, which was reflected by Larry Holmes, who didn't want to fight him. As great a boxer as he was, how he was presented, once Parkinson's came, ravaged his body and his mind, was pretty amazing. And the transition from someone who was not loved, often hated, to really the most well-known individual in the world. Yes, I'm sorry. Am I interrupting?
No, I think you're absolutely spot on.
Oh.
I think the fact that there was no other choice for the Atlanta Olympics, none in my mind anyway, to light that cauldron, zero, shows how far he really did come in the eyes of Americans. Because if you had said in the 1970s, we're going to host an Olympics and we're going to put the best representative of what the U.S. has to offer, I have to think that Muhammad Ali would probably be in the bottom three people of all time for most people. And that's a huge, huge turn of events. He didn't shape boxing. He shaped our country. And a lot of that was personal sacrifice. Look, you give up three of the best years of your career, and you see this in many different sports, right? In different types of situations. Ted Williams gave up three prime years of his career. Willie Mays did the same. Baseball players in the 40s were doing it to serve their country. And here you have Muhammad Ali doing it not to serve his country, to make a political statement. And without him, I don't know if the civil rights movement works the same way. I just don't. And there's a lot to be said. There's a lot more to be said for a person that can be remembered off the field when you're that good, and he was that good, than it is for you to be on the field. And there are not many athletes that you can say that about today. In fact, I can't think of more than maybe three. And that's enough.
One of the, you know, going from someone who you said you can never who made more of an impact off the field than on the field, someone who never really left, it never felt like you left the field. Gordie Howe, you know, dying at age 88, played his last game at age 51. This is not golf. One doesn't play hockey at a professional level until in the NHL. They just don't. This is not bocce. Now, the fun part about Gordie Howe was, now, you know, when people used to talk about the hat trick, it was, you know, you talk about hat trick, it's three goals. The Gordie Howe hat trick was a goal, an assist, and a fight.
Yep.
In the same game. And that was named after him. Why don't you start with Gordie Howe, since you're more of a hockey fan than I am?
All right.
And,
so,
you know, why don't you explain how important he has been in the sport?
All right. Well, Gordie Howe made the Detroit Red Wings. He did. He was, you just mentioned the Gordie Howe hat trick. Well, the most Gordie Howe hat tricks there are in NHL is Brendan Shanahan with 17. Gordie Howe had over 30 of those. 30. I mean, a great player, a humanitarian, a guy that at the age of 50 came out of retirement to play with his sons in the WHA. Now, Seth, you and I are now 40, and the thought of playing NHL hockey right now would make my skin crawl. Because I really think that I'd get crushed. With my knees and my back, I get out of bed and I hear creaking. And this man played professional hockey and played it well. He retired in his final season with over 20 goals and 40 points in 80 games. He played every single game. Gordie Howe was the epitome of the power forward, which you now equate to the John LeClairs, the Brendan Shanahans, the Kyle Oposos, the Phil Kessels. He revolutionized the game in the fact that he was everything and more. And if you have never seen Gordie Howe play, there is so much footage, and I don't know who took all this footage in the NHL. Like, you can say NFL Films did for the NFL. I don't know who did it in the NHL, but they have to be commended, because the history of the NHL is documented so well that it's really uncanny. And he was the best player in the NHL, and I know you can argue Bobby Orr, perhaps, but the best player in the NHL in history for over 50 years. And I know you can equate Babe Ruth to the best player in Major League Baseball for well over 100, but there was never discrimination in the NHL, which is another thing that's interesting in its own right. Hockey Town is not Hockey Town without Gordie Howe.
Well, also, to be fair, yes, there may not have been discrimination, but there was a lot, there were certainly a lot less African-American players, still are, but there were a lot more people, players, obviously, from Canada. Yeah, I think when you look at the first 75 years of the NHL, there's really only two names that come to fruition, that come to the forefront as the greatest players of all time, and it is Bobby Orr or Gordie Howe. As great as Maurice Richard was, as great as Eddie Shore was, Jean Beliveau, who died last year, it really was Gordie Howe or Bobby Orr. And while he may have been surpassed by Wayne Gretzky, he may have been surpassed by Mario Lemieux. Again, it's hard for us to gauge. We never saw Howe in his prime. But there really is only those. When you talk of the three greatest players of all time, really those are the only three or four that really hit the name, is Howe or Gretzky. And I think you pretty much stopped the conversation. And for someone to play six decades, I mean, realistically played 30 years for the most part as a professional hockey player, there's not much more you can really add.
Look, the man won six MVPs. He won six trophies as the NHL's leading point scorer. The only person that has won more is Wayne Gretzky. He was 18 when he started. He was 52 when he quit. 18 and 52. He played 23 NHL appearances, NHL All-Star games, between 1948 and 1970. He made a comeback, and Seth, you and I can understand this, we're 40 years old. In 5 years, he would have made a comeback to the WHA, which was the fledgling hockey league the World Hockey Association, which is where Gretzky started. By the way, he had 100 points that year and won the MVP. Are you kidding? At the time of his retirement, 801 goals, ranked first. 1,049 assists, ranked first. 1,850 points, ranked first. Just unbelievable stats. He played 1,767 games in 26 seasons. By the way, that's still an NHL record. That you talk about, and we get to the Stanley Cup, which was won last night by the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you talk about Sidney Crosby, who won the Conn Smythe Trophy. You talk about Malkin as probably two of the top 10 players in the NHL. And Crosby is probably one of the top three players in the NHL. Gordie Howe was so much better than this guy. And I know we like to think about the past being so much better than the present. I get it. But I don't think people understand how good this guy was. And I think they're only first learning about it in his death. And that happens a lot. Unfortunately, that happens a lot. But Gordie Howe was one of the best. You're right. He's in that conversation. He's on the Rushmore. And to lose two guys on the Rushmore in their respective sports is, in a week, is very difficult to comprehend. And, yeah, I mean, look, you and I grew up when Gretzky was the main guy, and we heard mythology of Gordie Howe. And now, you'll have a son in a couple of months, and he's going to grow up probably watching Austin Meadows, who is the first-round pick coming in. Austin Matthews, excuse me. That's the first-round pick coming into Toronto. And you're going to tell him stories of Gretzky. And Gretzky is going to be his Gordie Howe or Bobby Orr. And it's just interesting how, although we never saw the guy and never saw him play, the mythology of Gordie Howe is just so great. And it's a shame to have lost a guy and an ambassador like Gordie Howe.
Well said, and I only have one thing to add. Most likely, if our son is talking about hockey, he's probably going to be talking to Uncle Sean.
Fair enough.
Moving from the depressing to, I guess, the more uplifting, both literally and figuratively, we have the uplifting of the Stanley Cup for the second time by Sidney Crosby, as Pittsburgh went to San Jose and beat a really solid San Jose Sharks team 3-1 and 4-2 in a series they just seemed to control throughout. With a rookie goaltender in Matt Murray, a team that really was, I think, at Christmas was out of the playoffs, a team that didn't really seem to gel until the end of the year. And man, they didn't take the easy route through this championship, through this cup run.
No, and you kind of look at this NHL playoffs as in who. I was not overly impressed by any of the teams. There wasn't a Chicago Blackhawks that steamed through. There wasn't a dominant team, and I don't view Pittsburgh as a dominant team. But kudos to them. Look, they won the Cup, and the Cup's one of the hardest things to win because of the scheduling, because you're playing six or seven games in four consecutive series, and you have to win 16 games, and that's not easy. I mean, you look at the NHL, I believe the NBA, I believe it was fall, right? It was Moses Malone. So that's three series of seven games. Here we have hockey, which is four series of seven games. And hockey is, Seth, I know you're much more of an NBA over an NHL fan, but you could state it takes a lot more out of you to play a hockey game probably than it does to play a basketball game. Certainly with the recovery and the hitting, in that the mentality that these NHL players have and the way that they go about their business is remarkable to me. It's absolutely remarkable. I love watching playoff hockey. I know you tune in for playoff hockey, not necessarily for the regular season. But, look, hats off to Mike Johnson, who took over a Pens team mid-season. Mike Sullivan, who came in for Mike Johnson. My bad. Mike Sullivan, who came in. Hats off to him. Hats off to Matt Murray. Phil Kessel has wiped himself clean of the baby moniker. And you know what? No matter what Toronto gets out of this trade that they had with Phil Kessel, Pittsburgh won a cup. And if you win a cup, it doesn't really matter what you do. It's kind of you go for it all and you win, and you can trade. Would you, being Seth Kamens, trade 10 years of mediocrity at Maryland for one national championship? I think you would. I would.
10 years of mediocrity or 10 years of solid?
10 years of you make the tournament, go out in the first round.
Probably. Yeah, I would.
And would you do it for the Giants for a Super Bowl? I certainly would for the Jets. Well, then again, I'm always mediocre. So, I mean.
Yes. I mean, the difference is I've won 4 Super Bowls with the Giants. As a Giants fan, they've won 4 Super Bowls, been to 5. The Jets have been in 5 years before you were a twinkle in your parents' eyes. I mean, it's a little bit different. But, yes, you know, Maryland would mean a great deal to me if Maryland was able to win a championship. And, you know, we see how it plays out from here. But, you know, as you said, credit to Pittsburgh. Not an all-time great. You know, this is not a team that's going to go down in the pantheon, you know, of great teams. It's going to be argued against the Islanders of the early 80s, or the Oilers of the late 80s, or the Penguins of the early 90s. But a solid team was able to come back from losing their goalie, Marc-Andre Fleury, and a team that was able to really make a pretty surprising run to the championship.
Absolutely. Look, they didn't win their division. They went in as a wild card. They had a great run at the end of the season, and they proved that that they had enough. And that's all you need in the NHL is enough. You could ride a hot goalie, and that's what they did for the playoffs. And again, like I said, kudos to them. And next year's next year, and they can now take the cup wherever they need to. Kudos to Carl Hagelin as well, the former Ranger. I don't like to give credit to any Ranger, but former Rangers I have no problem doing it to. So kudos to them. Moving on to the NBA Finals, which tonight is Game 6. Tonight
game
has
five.
No Draymond. Game 5 has no Draymond Green. Warranted? Not warranted? What do you think?
It wasn't warranted from the actual incident with LeBron James. It may have been warranted over everything that's happened from a cumulative effect over the playoffs, starting with everything that happened with Steven Adams. I don't think it's unreasonable. But I do think it's sad to see a star player suspended, you know, for a game in a final. But I also kind of wonder, you know, not that LeBron was asking for the suspension per se, but a Kobe would have used it as an incentive to destroy this team. And it doesn't seem that's how LeBron is taking it. And not that I really question LeBron's killer instinct or anything along those lines, but it does strike me as something that you would figure he would just kind of put in his mind, okay, we're going to win this no matter what. Or maybe he's just kind of conceding in his mind that they can't win it without something like this happening. I don't know.
Well, look, you are, and I don't mean to sound mean, but you are always comparing LeBron to Michael. Is that even fair?
No, he wants to be known. First of all, I compared him a lot of ways to Magic. I always thought he was more of Magic than Michael. But
I'm saying every time we discuss, like, he wouldn't go to Miami because Michael wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do this because Michael wouldn't do this. You've already
He wants to be known as a great player.
You and I have already established to you that he can never be Michael.
No.
So is it fair to compare him to Michael at this point?
I'm not sure what one has to, I think it's still an apt comparison. Do you think a Magic or a Larry or these are guys who are, look, if I have LeBron at worst, at best, as the third best player of all time by the time he retires, that's not exactly diminishing him in the mind. It's not really being.
No, I get it. I have a hard time. I understand your point, but I think Magic and Michael and Larry would take every single opportunity to try and get into another person's head, right? And they did. The only guy that I think that didn't do that was Kareem, because he really didn't have to. But I think everybody else did, and I think Magic and Michael did that as well. And if they saw an opportunity to provoke another person into getting suspended or committing a foul, they would do it. I think Michael would do it too.
It's not the provoking part.
Okay.
We all do what we need to do to win a game.
Yep.
And maybe I didn't really think about it or articulate it particularly well. But I don't know. I guess to me, if LeBron loses his championship, which seems likely, he'll be 2-5 in the championships, and to a degree that's unfair, because in 4 of the 5 championships he was probably a member of the lesser team, the exception being the Mavericks in 10. I guess it's I don't know. I have trouble determining whether this should have been or shouldn't have been. But I really do think you have to give Adam Silver credit for doing it. The easiest thing would be
Adam,
to push it back to pushing it back the next season for a couple of games as opposed to taking it.
Absolutely. I think Adam Silver has done everything right. Quite frankly, I don't know of one misstep he's had from Donald Sterling to this. He has proved that he has the wherewithal and the moxie to do this. And I think that's absolutely spot on. I think if you make the claim that if a foul in the first quarter is the same as a foul in the fourth quarter, which is what the NBA and the NHL and the strike zone is the same, right? That's part of the deal. Then you have to call this. And you have to make this a suspension. And you have to keep this going. And I love the fact that Draymond Green's not allowed in the arena tonight. Why are you making an exception because it's a championship game? It's the rule. The rule is the rule. So he's watching it in the Oakland Coliseum where the A's are playing. And if they win, there's a tunnel to the Golden State Arena where he can go and celebrate after the game. I'm in with that. But if they had allowed him to watch it in the box, which is totally against the rules, I would have been a little upset. I would have probably said, why? So I'm glad he's suspended.
Do you think he warranted the suspension?
Absolutely. I thought he warranted it when he kicked Steven Adams in the groin last time.
I thought that was more than this one was.
It was. Absolutely more. I think this is... You're right. This is not because he did it this time. It's a culmination of, and Silver said it today. He said, we warned them. We told them before this series, we're going to be watching for it. Well, if you're going to be watching for it, and you've been put on warning, double secret probation, as they say in Animal House, you got to be wary of the fact that if you do it again, you're going to get caught. So, you know what? You got caught, and now you got to pay the piper. And if Golden State is that good, they'll win without him. And you know what? Even if they lose tonight, they still got two more games to win. And do you believe that they're going to lose three straight games against this team? I don't. I would actually love to see it happen, but I don't believe it will.
Do you think it ends tonight?
No, I don't think it ends tonight. I think it actually ends in Cleveland. I think it ends the next game.
It's been such a disappointing series. From, you know, the first two games, there was no reason to watch the fourth quarter. The fourth game was not a great game. It was an interesting game, but not a great game. Who would you even give the MVP to at this point? I can't think of – I don't see anyone really that's been suited for it.
I think you give it to Iguodala.
Could very well
be,
which would be funny in just in relation to the point of if he went back-to-back MVP as, at best, the fourth-best player on a team.
But that's okay. You don't have to be the best player to win the MVP when it comes time for – when it comes time for the finals. And to me, his stats have never been points per game, right?
No, I understand.
His value is on defense more than any other player. And I think that, I mean, you could give it to James Michael McAdoo. I mean, if you really want to give it to just somebody else. But, who's played like 5 minutes. But the fact is, I think at the end of the day, he's your guy. He's been the glue, and they have really, when he was inserted into the starting lineup, it changed. And they tried it again this year with Bogut. It didn't work, and then they inserted Iguodala, and all of a sudden they win. So sometimes you don't have to be the NBA MVP to be the finals MVP.
Well, let's say they win, whether it's in five or six or whatever. The obvious debate, this is a team that won 73 games, they won the championship, they beat a very good Western, they went to a very good Western Conference team, conference run, they beat the best team in the East. The argument of that team ever is difficult. I don't think anyone really puts them at that level. But I also don't love the dismissiveness of some of these other teams, of Magic on them, of Larry. And I don't, you know, of the Bulls. This would have been a team that would have been a pain in the neck. Now, I don't think the 86. I think the 86 Celtics team would have beat them pretty convincingly. And again, your argument is difficult. But, I was talking about this on the other show last week. The team that this seems to, again, I'm not comparing it strictly from a talent perspective because the team had some teams and Hall of Famers. But this team reminds me of what I would think from an athletic standpoint, not from a shooting standpoint, the old Celtics were. We had a 6'9 center who wasn't a great scorer but could rebound and start the break and passed beautifully, and the offense ran a lot of ways through him. You had that.
So you're talking about Dave Cowens' teams.
No, go further back.
Well, doesn't Cowens and Havlicek hit that too?
Yeah, actually, that even may be a better one. I was going back to Russell in that, great rebounder. Yeah, but Cowens a hustler, a tough guy. That's actually a better comparison. I used Havlicek in that argument. Havlicek, the smooth scorer that played really good defense, sounds like the other two, kind of could jump between a two and a three. And, we were playing around with, the Bucks and I were talking about this. They remind me more of those kind of teams than any of the other recent teams of the last 25 years. And
the only other team that they remind me of in, let's say, the last 25 years is the Pistons, who didn't play with a dominant center. I mean, they played with Ben Wallace, who was a defensive center. Draymond Green, defensive center. Different type of team, but because they had Rasheed Wallace, it was a different type of team. But they relied on backcourt shooting with Billups and Hamilton. And at the time, and even today, we view them as an anomaly, right, of the era. They are the era without the big man, a complete anomaly of that time, and without a superstar, complete anomaly of that time. So I think they're the best comparison, say, of the last 25 years. If you want to go back further, hell, you can go to any Celtics team and say, yes. But I think that, to me, is the best comparison. You may want to also look at the old Golden State Warriors with Thurmond, or even the Bullets with Wes Unseld, both of which Draymond Green reminds me of the limited footage that I've seen of Wes Unseld, of very much the similar player.
So we got about 20, we've run through quite a few quite a bit in the last 25 minutes. We have our draft next week. We'll talk about that kind of going forward.
We will redeem ourselves.
We can't be much worse than we were in the NFL. If Golden State does win the championship, does Cleveland trade Kevin Love?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Seth. Try again.
If Golden State wins the championship, does Cleveland trade Kevin Love?
Wow. Well, you have to think of the teams that can even absorb a Kevin Love, and teams that can give back something that Cleveland would want. Cleveland's not looking for draft picks at this point. They're looking for players. So are you going to get – remember, Cleveland will be, I believe, over the cap. Well, if LeBron opts out, they won't be, which he will, to re-sign. So they'll be – I believe they might be under the cap. If they are under the cap, they can make a trade 1-for-1. If they're over – or 2-for-1 or whatever it is. If they are over the cap, the only trade that they can make is to fit – within $100,000 of that salary. So you'd have to find $100,000 or a combination thereof of Kevin Love. And the interesting rumor du jour out there is Carmelo Anthony for Kevin Love and some parts, whatever parts that may be, and add up to that cost. If you're the Knicks, do you do that trade? You get Love for 4 more years. At, I believe it's 16 or 17, and you're trading Melo at 23 to Cleveland. Does it make you better if you're the Knicks?
It makes me younger if I'm the Knicks.
True. Well, I don't know. I don't think Love is all that much younger.
Love is 27.
Yeah. Okay.
Melo is 33. And I guess the thought is this. I think I do it. There is some reticence to it. But is Porzingis going to develop into the play to the player he can potentially be with Carmelo there? Is Carmelo the person who's going to turn around? Carmelo's been with the Knicks for, 5 years, give or take?
Yeah, let's say 5 years.
Is the team going to rebuild to a championship level with Carmelo? Probably not.
Okay.
Is Carmelo – now, I'm not as negative on Carmelo as other people I've seen on my Facebook wall, but it would make sense if they want to get rid of Carmelo. The problem is, I guess, if I get rid of Carmelo, I also want to, if possible, again, depending on who you're trading it to and what the salary cap implications are, I want real youth. I don't know if you can get that with Melo at $25 million a year for 4 more years. this may be the best that you can get for him. Again, with additional moving parts.
Right. So, and those additional moving parts are not going to be draft picks.
No, they're not. And, you know, you look at who else Cleveland has. I'm trying to think. Delavadova? Not, you know, it's not really going to be – I mean, the New York will like him, but it's not really a great fit. The rest of the team is pure veterans anyway. I think you do it. I think you do it if you're both. I think Love needs a new start somewhere. And the idea of Love and Porzingis is a pretty interesting front line.
Yeah, Love is earning 19.5, which is actually more than I thought. So you got to measure up another $4 million. So you're looking at, they got a lot of free agents. So it would have to be mostly a sign-and-trade, I'm thinking. Something like a Mo Williams or a Mozgov or a James Jones or a Richard Jefferson or a Sasha Khan. That would be a guy that you'd be looking at because he has one more year on that contract, and he's a little younger. He's, 31. Not that much younger.
Ain't he that old?
Yeah. Well, he was born in 85. He didn't come over for a while. So Channing Frye's earning 7.5. I mean, you're looking at those types of guys. On their roster, the only guys that are younger than 30 are Mozgov, that are earning less than $9 million, are Mozgov at 5, but he's a free agent. Delavadova, love that name, who's earning 1.5, not really getting you very much, and he's a free agent too. He's 25. Jordan McRae, who I believe is a former Terp, who is earning...
No.
Wrong McRae?
McRae went to tennis. No, different. It's not. It's different guy. But good try on that, though.
Tennessee, you're absolutely right.
Tennessee,
so
I think,
He's earning like $800,000. And then you have Dante Jones, who's earning $8,000, which is awesome, considering, as we said a couple of weeks ago, his fine was like, what, $60? So, I mean, right? I mean, but going into next year, they have committed $103 million already. That's a lot of money for a roster that is basically top five heavy. You know what? If they win, it doesn't matter. Again, if they win, it doesn't matter. Now, let's look at Cleveland with a Carmelo-type deal. Carmelo would play the 3 with Tristan Thompson playing the 4. Or Thompson plays the 5, and you put Melo, and you play Melo as the small 4, and you know what? You got a good lineup there. I mean, Irving, LeBron, Melo, and Thompson, and Shumpert as your defensive guy. J.R. Smith coming off the bench. Is there enough basketballs to go around? Is one story, but. You know what? Melo's always said he wanted to play with LeBron. So it could happen. But to answer your question, do I think Love will be traded? No, I don't think that there's enough. There are enough teams that want Kevin Love. I think Kevin Love has been basically I'm thinking unwrapped, right? His deficiencies have come out more in this series and this year than they have in anything else. The guy is a turnstile on defense. And he's James Harden as a power forward. And that's really, really bad for a guy that's earning $113 million for the next 5 years. $113 million. Wow. All right. Well, we talked a little bit about the NHL. We talked about the NBA. And now I'm going to go to one of Seth's favorite topics, soccer. Yes. Yes, I'm going to soccer. So, No. Look, it's important, right? We got the Copa America where the U.S., they won, right?
Yeah.
And, but did they luck out because Brazil lost to begin with? They didn't have to face Brazil, who they stink against.
Well, and they can't seem to win. Everyone stinks against Brazil, number one. But remember, Copa, they won their division. It's not like they won the entire Copa.
No, I understand. But Ecuador, they play next. And they play Ecuador because Ecuador beat Brazil. So because Ecuador, they're facing instead of Brazil.
Yeah, but Brazil was not
in
the tournament.
Right.
It's not as if Brazil, they got lucky because Brazil lost to Peru last night.
Right, but my point
was, soccer capacity is a little bit ridiculous.
My point was, did they luck out because the team, much like the Blackhawks lost in the first round, so thus the Sharks don't have to play the Blackhawks, which they probably would have lost against because their Blackhawks match up better. Did the U.S. luck out because Brazil was eliminated?
Yeah, they did, and I can't lie about that. Nobody wants to play Brazil, but the U.S. Ecuador is not a bad matchup for the U.S. And especially if Luis Suarez, who's been injured, who's one of the five best players in the world, is unable to play, the U.S. may very well be favored. And if they're favorite, if that's how it plays out, the odds are that they would go to the semis and play Argentina.
Now, how far do they and this is where my knowledge now concludes, for at least Copa America. I got some other knowledge going for Eurocopa. You see, I'm developing knowledge here for soccer because I need to compete on a higher level. And so say they lose in the semifinals.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that go? Are they in the World Cup? Are they in the World Cup as of today? Do they have to do more to make the World Cup? Where do we stand?
The idea of the Copa is the biggest tournament for a nation outside of the World Cup. So for countries in the Western Hemisphere. That's the idea of the Copa. The thought was that if they had a bad run, the Klinsmann may be out. And there's still a lot of debate or dispute about what he has brought to the U.S. over the last few years. But what this does, it gives them credibility, it adds some credibility to them, a team that's really kind of fallen badly in the last year or two, and gives them some confidence for World Cup qualifying. And what should be happening in the near future is you have kind of the preliminary qualifying, which they've already advanced on, and then you have the 16 qualifying, where you have six teams from, it's called CONCACAF, which is the Caribbean and Central America and Mexico and Canada. And the top three, I believe, mate, are automatically go to the World Cup. And that has not started yet.
Okay. So this has really no bearing on the World Cup itself?
None.
Okay, so fantastic. So I got all this knowledge for really no reason whatsoever. But Well, I got some more impressive stuff with Eurocopa because I did read and I watched a little of the game. So, look, Spain looked really good. There's a guy named Iniesta. I don't even know. Is that how you pronounce his name? Iniesta?
Andre Iniesta.
Yeah, he had a pretty good pass for the win.
He did.
Spain.
He did.
And
you are a brilliant soccer commentator based upon this.
Look, I could do my best English accent, and he had a glorious pass straight to the goal.
He had to play for Barcelona, and he actually scored the World Cup winning goal in 2010 against Holland in the 115th or 116th minute. At one point, he was considered the third best or third or fourth best player in the world behind Ronaldo and Messi. He's, you know, he's gotten older. He's not at that level anymore, but still a top level pro and still a stalwart on the Spanish national team. I didn't get to see any of that game.
I'm sorry to hear that. I saw more of it than you did.
Yes, you did.
That's very scary.
Well, some of us have to work for a living.
Oh, really? That's where this is coming from? We're going to go there. This coming from the guy that works for himself and could take off 20 minutes to watch a game anytime he wants.
And
uh-huh.
He does. I had on my small screen, I had Ireland, Sweden. I had Italy, Belgium. Now, I walked away from it, and I came back to it, but you know, I have, I'm a CPA. I have two screens on. The second screen in the little corner, I have soccer dog. And
oh,
I knew you were
going
to be on this stuff, so I had to be prepared.
Look, I am rather impressed that you are prepared. That being said, I am very happy to have extolled my knowledge upon you. And, yeah. Whatever, right?
Anyway, so
none of this has any bearing on the World Cup. None of it.
Not directly, no.
So at the end of the day, I learned all this knowledge for a sport that I only watch probably twice every 4 years, being the Olympics and the World Cup. And this stuff has no bearing on either one.
Not one.
Awesome. So I'll pat myself on the back and call myself an idiot for doing that. So,
honey, I've done that to you many times.
Yeah, I know, but this is me. This is not you doing it. This is me doing it. So, I mean, we could talk baseball for a couple of minutes, but there's really no bearing on that either because we know that it's, what, June? And we know Seth doesn't do baseball in June.
No, not until August.
No, but so. Let me ask you this, though. So Von Miller shows up at the White House, right? Von Miller, who has not signed a contract, gets offered $39.8 million, I believe it's $39.8 million, guaranteed, at an $114 million contract. The Broncos put a time limit on it and then leak it to the media and say, look, this guy didn't get the contract that this is the amount of money that we're giving him. Von Miller then proceeds to cut John Elway out of a picture and post it on his Instagram or his Twitter. What on God's green earth do you make of this? I just think this is back to high school.
Does he like me or does he like me like me? That's kind of how it feels. It does. It feels like it feels on both sides. Like it does feel like it feels exactly like high school. You know, it's kind of hard to pity a guy who just was offered a $115 million contract. But the whole idea that he cut out John Elway's face from a picture, sports seems to be going it's like following society just going further and further downhill for the entitled. You know, the one thing I wish you were around to talk about last week, and we can bring it up quickly because it actually happened today in a non-sports related, was the banning of Ariel Helwani, the MMA reporter.
That's right.
He didn't like the UFC was not happy that he was breaking news. Now, I don't know if you saw this, but Donald Trump has now banned the Washington Post. From attendance. So, yeah, this just came out a few minutes ago on Matt.
Please, do we have to talk any... Look, for those that are unaware, Seth and I are both not voting for Donald Trump. I don't even have to ask him if he's voting for Donald Trump, and I know he's not voting for Donald Trump. The more... And maybe this is me, and we're not a political show, but I'm going to go off a little bit. The more and more we legitimately talk about Donald Trump and the asinine comments that he makes, is it more to the point of no publicity is bad publicity for him? And is it easier just to ignore the crap that he spews? Or are we legitimizing it by not commenting on it?
It's a sports show. I don't feel a need to discuss him in general. I told Carly I don't even want to talk about it anymore. The idea that we have 5 months of this, I find agonizing. And the only reason I broached it was because it was that same bully mentality that the UFC is utilizing. Now, Helwani, I think, you know, was restored due to public pressure from other journalists and just the whole idea being ridiculous.
Yeah.
Would the NBA ban Adrian Wojnarowski? Would the NFL ban Adam Schefter? No.
No, but the NFL... And Seth, I know you and I talked about this. The NFL did ban out the NFL Network, which is what the arm of the NFL for media, correct? When Albert Breer was the correspondent for the NFL Network in charge of the Patriots beat, and he continually chastised Bill Belichick after the Cincinnati game. They took him off the beat. I don't know how that's much different than what the MMA did. And Albert Breer summarily quit and now works for MMQB. So I don't know if that's any different than what MMA did, except for the fact that that was their arm as opposed to the MMA, where this guy was not employed by MMA, correct?
No, he was not employed by MMA. He is the best known MMA writer out there, and was initially with Fox, which is the exclusive from a national standpoint, the exclusive provider of UFC, and is known as probably the best. No, is one of the most honest and one of the best reporters in the MMA umbrella.
Right.
So it's just disappointing. The whole idea of it is disappointing, to say the least. But, you know, I am glad he has been restored.
Great. So we have about 2 minutes left. I know this has been said all across media and all across everywhere today, yesterday, and whatnot, but thoughts and prayers of this show and Seth and myself go out to the members of the Orlando community that suffered such a great tragedy. I know that it's been said time and time again that tragedy happens all over the world, but when it hits home, when it's in the U.S., when it's just, I saw it on the internet yesterday at around, I don't know, 12 o'clock, and I was shocked that something like this could happen again. And the problem is that I'm continually shocked, because maybe I just shouldn't be anymore.
What's really how we all feel, and that unfortunately in this thing of this magnitude, we've almost become hardened by, immune to, not the emotional impact of it, but just that it actually occurs in the first place. And to this, we're not really a political show. We're not going to go into detail in our thoughts of who should have done what and this and that, but obviously our thoughts and prayers are with everyone out there who has been impacted either directly or indirectly. So, and on that solemn note, we're going to call it a show. For Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamens, backsportspage.com, Blog Talk Radio, NBA Draft.
Next week, have a good draft day. Profiles. We'll talk to you then.